Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset.
Paperclip maximizer, single-minded if you mind at all.
We are listening to Paperclip Maximizer from indie artist Rosie Tucker. It's off their latest album, Utopia Now, which came out in March of this year. Sometimes you want music that lifts your spirits, a tune with a solid rhythm and punch melody. Sometimes you want music that breaks you open and expands your mind. But what about both at the same time? Well, Tucker's music does exactly that. It's a mix of driving guitar riffs, densely poetic lyrics, and unique vocals with incredible range. Tucker has been praised by the likes of NPR, Pitchfork, and Stereo Gum. I caught up with Tucker just before their tour took the stage at Chicago's Beat Kitchen. And we started with how they're able to keep their music light and joyful while not shying away from deeper topics.
I don't have so much control over necessarily the affect that comes out in the music. I think it is whatever is appealing when I write it. But I do feel that on this record, the emotional content was born out of a lot of a difficult thinking in my life. And there was just a feeling of freedom at having worked through some of those thoughts. And I think that that is where the levity is coming from.
For the listener who may not have heard of you before, how would you describe the Rosie Tucker sound? Who is Rosie Tucker?
Oh, Rosie Tucker is a songwriter who was born and raised in Los Angeles. I am very inspired by the long-running work of famous queer songwriter ladies like Ani DeFranco.
I'm walking out in the rain and I am listening to the low moan of the dial tone again.
I'm thinking about the Indigo Girls.
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. And the best thing you ever done for me.
Not at all a lady, but the music of the songwriter-composer Glenn Copeland is very important to me.
Speaking of those inspirational artists, I mean, if you were to think about your own career and sort of separate it into eras, because I know your early sound was very indie folk, and then today you're making more indie rock-centric music. So is there an artist that you would be able to assign to each of your different eras?
Oh, this is a beautiful and terrifying question. When I was writing more folk music, my mind was really blown by the songwriter Anais Mitchell, who now is very renowned for her musical Hadestown, but who also has put out several albums of just fantastic folk songs.
I'm alive. I'm a shortwave radio. Do you copy?
When I started recording with a full band for my second full-length Never Not, I really loved the music of Hop Along. I think that Frances Quinlan is a phenomenal writer, very, very unique vocalist and guitar player as well.
How content are the ones worth some
want to talk now about identity in songwriting, right? In an interview, you said, quote, "If I'm the sum of everything that's resulted in me, then so is my art." That line alone itself, it reads like a song lyric, Rosie. I just love it. So I want you to expand on that idea.
I think that there is a way of relating to identity that can bring us into further and more connections with other people, including people who occupy quite different identities or have had very different experiences. And so I think that probably what I was getting to with that quote is the fact that I am a non-binary person. One of the identities that I occupy that through this work, some people know about in a public way.
Yeah.
And it's very important to me. The trans community is hugely important to me, and I take so much pride in it. All art is coming from the self and from a tradition, like from popular tradition, which also forms us so much culture, you know?
All right, time for some more music. This is Unending Bliss. You got a powerful message. If at the bottom of everything we are all alone, then I want nothing but unending bliss for my enemies. I mean, this immediately makes me think of the comment sections online or Twitter feuds, right? Because this is not the usual outlook on conflict. So is this aspirational, Rosie, or are you just a saint?
Oh, no. It is. Everyone wants to know about this line. It is aspirational. It is aspirational. I was looking for relief from my own feelings of anger and bitterness. And one of the things that started to bring me some comfort and some perspective was the fact that most of the people, like when you mentioned the comment section, most of the people who are being vitriolic on the internet are mm-hmm. disempowered themselves, because most people are disempowered. So in thinking about my own sort of personal bitterness, I just wanted to find a way to zoom out until I could find common ground with people who I felt very personally negative toward. And I had to zoom out very far. Ultimately, I have more in common with the people I have personal issues with than I do with perhaps some of the people that I think are ruining the world. And so I am reaching for a feeling of forgiveness that is not charitable to others, but is freeing to myself and allows me to feel I am in solidarity with the things that I believe in the world, I guess, if that makes any sense at all.
It makes perfect sense. And you're really using this album, Utopia Now, to explore a lot of social commentary, which I find commendable. I mean, do you feel this responsibility to use your music as a platform?
Oh, I do not feel responsibility at all to use my music as a platform. I feel a compulsion. For a long time, I think that I struggled with being in kind of a musical ecosystem where there was a great deal of tweeting. And I am no longer utilizing that app, but there was a kind of environment of, we have stopped using the phrase virtue signaling, but I think it's fairly practical actually. And I felt like no one was listening to me when I wanted to express certain values or ideas. And so it got driven into the music because those feelings were not being satisfied in my work life and my personal life. In the music way. I think the album was born out of extreme frustration that where it brought me relief to vocalize my feelings and my values.
Let's listen to another song. This is Lightbulb.
Get the record done on time to maximize demand. While Palantir sells us to LAPD, I get jealous when someone I know's on TV. It's a sleight of machine to distract and deceive. See how everyone's clapping for free.
This song has this self-reflective tone to it, Rosie. We just heard a line that where you said, quote, I get jealous when someone I know's on TV. So talk about that, the internal and external pressures of your creativity also being a business.
I think that this pressure is one that is felt increasingly by people in many different fields, as we are all more and more, the word I want to use is surveilled, and it's not perfect because that implies like a big baddie watching. And I'm not trying to sound conspiratorial, but as there is more of an imperative to be public in more and more industries and to document and to share, there becomes increasing opportunities for comparison. And so these opportunities for professional comparison now follow me into the bathroom and in bed at night. I'm more likely to see something that makes me think, oh, what am I doing with my life? You know, if this person is receiving these accolades, what am I doing? Kind of this like petty jealousy is in the song alongside recognition of the surveillance of the Los Angeles Police Department as aided by a corporation started by Peter Thiel called Palantir. And so kind of recognizing there are big baddies in our world. There are, you know, people who are profiting from surveillance, and kind of the trickle down runoff of that is like, ooh, I feel bad about my art. And that's obviously a very safe position to be in. I am not personally being surveilled by the Los Angeles Police Department at this point in time, as far as I know. But these things are related to me.
So knowing what you know now about what it takes to make a music career, what's your advice then for the next generation of musicians?
Oh my gosh. I suppose a little bit of advice, but also maybe a request. So the advice that I would have is just to allow the art to be centered in your life, and to not identify too hard with where your money comes from, because I think that there is enormous cultural pressure to say, I make enough money from doing my art that I am for real. And for me, that is historically not how most of the art that has really moved me has functioned, because I have just always loved the underdogs, and the underdogs are generally not who is popping off on the Billboard charts.
That's true.
And thank you. I would like to say that a huge portion of how I am able to tour and make this sustainable for myself and the people involved is a trust fund, generational wealth. And I see so many musicians who are excellent, excellent writers and performers who have an incredible work ethic. But right now, this industry is fundamentally not sustainable. And many of the musicians who people know and love are in a similar position to me. And that doesn't mean that their art is not good. It just is really important to talk about. And so I think that it is a very complicated and dispersed kind of industry, especially in the artist and touring way, because the jobs are very much freelance. But I would love for there to be a wider conversation around labor and where the money is in this industry, and How do we ensure that it's not simply people who are wealthy who are able to participate? Because obviously that robs us of so much great art.
Give me your quick thoughts then on arts education. I ask because you have experience as an educator, and we know that public schools across the country are cutting this program. What are your dreams for musical education?
Any musical education all the time. I have taught on instruments where people were renting, you know, the guitars through the school, and I have taught on laptops. Physically, playing an instrument is such an incredible tool in like the regulation of the human nervous system. And I think we are, once again, robbing ourselves of a really excellent means for many young people to be handling and processing the stress of their lives. And we live in very stressful times. So I am very much a fan of any and all art education all the time. I think that the benefits are unmatched. And just because there is not an immediate application mm-hmm. that will turn into a job does not mean that it is not hugely, hugely important to our human development.
That's Rosie Tucker, a unique voice in indie rock. Their album Utopia Now is out now. Thank you so much for coming on, Rosie.
Sasha, thank you so much for having me.
Let's go out on one more song. This is Suffer Like You Mean It. This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Ethan Schwab. It was edited by me. If you like this conversation, we drop our music podcasts every Saturday. And don't forget to check out our full list of conversations on wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.